When you confront death at age 22, everything changes. It got me thinking about what I wanted to do before I actually die, because life is unpredictable. Can you relate? I'm Kiki Kelly, and this is my story. My friend Amy Hallberg thought I should share some of my stories with you. She'll be joining me here. Some are hard, some are funny, and some are just unbelievable. But they're all true. So here we are.
Season 2, Episode 4.
Tales from an Inadvertent Bucket List Champ.
So you live with an invisible illness, and now we are in the time of COVID. So what can you tell us about those two things?
Yeah, it's interesting because I had already been, as you know, we traveled together to Southeast Asia in November. And since then, I mean, I've been out of remission for a while. Remission is when you don't have the illness. And so on and off, it's like I'll get an infection in my J pouch. And that will involve 10 to 12 days of a medicine called metronidazole, which makes me very, very nauseous. And then once I'm through with that antibiotic, because it's so strong, will ramp up the candida that's still in my blood. So then I'll have to take another medicine for that. So it just keeps going on and on. So since we traveled together, I've pretty much been in quarantine. I mean, not the kind of COVID quarantine, but I've kind of been in my house. So it wasn't that different for me to be like, okay, lockdown now.
Right. As you point out, COVID is its own special kind of invisible illness.
Right. I think that's why a lot of people have trouble really realizing how dangerous it is. Because if, you know, for example, if we were having a zombie apocalypse, you could see the zombies coming at you. You would feel perfectly fine shutting all the doors and windows to your house and not, you know, congregating with your neighbors. Right? And sometimes I wish I could just put someone into my body just temporarily. Like, I hope that that's something that we can do in the far future. You know, like just kind of switch places with someone so that you can actually feel what someone is feeling. Because it's really hard to explain sometimes, especially if I have a mouthful of ulcers from, again, I have ulcerative colitis /Crohn's/IBD. It's really hard to explain.
You've talked about how you really do rely on people that know you. So your inner circle is people who just understand that sometimes you're going to bail. Sometimes you've made plans that you really want to keep, but your mouth is full of ulcers and you can't talk.
Yeah. And usually that's only just an extra intestinal symptom. So there's more going on than that. But a good example is my birthday that had been planned for over a year to go to Phuket, Thailand, and Angkor Wat in Cambodia. And I was 4 days late to my own birthday this year. And here, you know, I've got my best friends in the world. Like, by the way, the friends that I end up trusting, I keep for the entire lifetime. But here you all are together in one little house, right? And you don't know each other necessarily. I was like, oh my God, good thing that they're all such cool people.
And then even when you got there, you had to pace yourself. Even though we know what your illness is, it's still hard to understand because, you know, we went to see a temple, we went to see a Buddha, we went and did all these things and you were keeping pace and you were okay. Yeah, you were moving slowly, but you seemed happy and fine. And to us, what it looked like was you were in a good place. And what it really was you were operating on the energy you had, and when it ran out, it was done.
Yeah, that's why it's always better for me to do things in the morning. I mean, that's ironic because I'm so not a morning person. But if I get a good night's sleep, which, you know, may or may not happen. For example, when we went to see the elephant refuge, you know, I slept well and I love animals so much. And I was down in the mud and the elephant was flinging mud at me and I'm flinging mud at the elephant. And I put some elephant mud underneath my eyes like a football player and I'm just having a blast. But yes, by the end of that day, I hit a wall. And it's not even the end of that day. For other people's end of day is what, you know, 10, well, 11.
There are people in that group who like to stay out late.
Yes. And my end of day, depending on how much energy I expended earlier in the day, can end at anywhere between 4 and 7. Like, I'm just done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to explain that.
And I guess it probably gets tiring to have to explain it too all the time.
That's why I'm careful about who I travel with. I'm careful about who are my very, very close friends because, you know, sometimes, I don't know if you've ever been just really, really sick, let's say with strep throat and a high fever. Would you say that you're easy? I mean, when you're not asleep, are you temperamentally easy to deal with?
Goodness, when I get a migraine, we already have code for that around here. Like, I have a migraine, I'm going to go shut myself down. And everyone's like, okay, she's going to go away now. Right? Like, yeah, done.
Exactly. But migraines are also invisible illnesses. I mean, although you may show the pain more, I've gotten so accustomed to
treating myself. Yeah, you hide it better. Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, so much of my life is acting like I'm okay because I don't want to spoil the party and I want to do all these things. I want to do everything that everyone else does, which is why when I go to the gastroenterologist, and that's not very often because it takes a lot for me to go to the doctor because I know my body really, really well. And usually sleep will do it or getting some IVs or whatever. But when I go see him, he always gives me a good level set about how much more I do with my life than almost any of his patients. I mean, a lot of patients really just get used to being ill, and maybe it's because they don't go into remission ever, or sometimes, I mean, I think it's the depression of it. You start to think of yourself as less than a person.
And, you know, you now, like when you got sick, for example, on that trip, you had to tell me some of the things to do to help you. You actually, even when you're like at your very worst, you're pretty good at saying, and I need this. You were talking about how when you were in college and first experiencing some of these things, you were, 21 years old and you had these roommates you're living with?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest achievements of my life that I would never have even thought of as an achievement before, is asking for help and knowing what I need. There were so many years that I was so overwhelmed and confused. Oftentimes, this illness will, you know, your body is trying to conserve energy and fight the infection in your abdomen area. So energy doesn't go very much to your brain. And it's a little like pregnancy, where I remember being in the midst of pregnancy, and I'm a professional writer by trade. And I'm looking at the ceiling, looking at this crack, and I cannot think of the word for crack. And I'm like, crevice? I mean, seriously, I could think of every other word, but I could not find the word for crack, like a crack in the ceiling. So... you know, for many, many years, I would just hide. I would go and hide, and that would upset my friends, and I didn't realize how much it upset people. They just thought I was abandoning them. And what I was trying to do was to not be a burden.
So you were sparing them.
I thought I was, but...
They really wanted more of you. They wanted you to open up and to help them to understand.
Well, it took people telling me, hey, that really hurt when you didn't do this thing that we planned, or you didn't show up, or you left early. It's really hard to explain an invisible illness. It's easier if you can say things like, hey, I have hives all over my body, which I do get from time to time, or every time I go to the bathroom, it's blood, or, you know, I can usually lift my own body weight, but when I'm ill, sometimes I can't open a jar of pickles.
You know, you've spoken about that too, though. Even those things can make people really uncomfortable. Because what am I supposed to do with the fact that my really strong friend Kiki can't open a jar of pickles? If I'm not okay with some of those things, you've spoken about how even people where their disabilities or their illnesses or their chronic conditions are very visible, sometimes people overlook them because it's so uncomfortable to watch someone suffer and not be able to fix it.
Right. I mean, and I understand that. I understand that if you are not familiar with whatever disability that person has, that you, it's just easier to avoid it completely. We don't talk about it much in this society. It's a society of let's be productive. Everyone should be happy. That's why it's important. That's one of the reasons I wanted to tell my stories in this Bucket List Champ podcast, because I don't think a lot of people would look at me when they see me at wrestling functions or, you know, when I've been traveling throughout the world and say, oh, that's a sick person there.
Right.
I they would have no idea. And half of my life is spent trying to hide it to spare them the uncomfortableness of talking about, you know, I've had to take health leave of absences, I think, at almost every job at some point. That's not always easy. And so then when I'm back, you know, I work extra hard because I don't want to be that person that is, you know, that they're sorry they hired, and I don't want to be that friend. That's why I kind of overdo it. You know, when I'm well, I want to do all the things, catch up with my friends and laugh a lot. And, you know, partially because I'm so grateful to, like, I know what it's like to feel grateful to be able to walk. And what it's like to have a normal bowel movement. You know, I don't take those things for granted. So in a way, like, I wouldn't change my situation if I could just wave a magic wand and have it go away. I wouldn't change it. I know that sounds strange, but I mean, especially at the time that it's happened. Now, don't give me a magic wand if I'm actually like super suffering at the time. Cause of course, you know, of course.
Yeah, of course.
But when it's over, it seems like those are my great evolutionary leaps. And there's always something to be learned. And that's when I grow. I mean, growing pains, but of a different kind. It's spiritual growing pains.
I'd like to come back to something you said. You're not doing this podcast, and particularly today's podcast, to complain or to make it about you. You actually want to do this, and you actually spent a lot of time educating people about this because somebody needs to talk about it.
Right. There's nothing worse than pity. I mean,
right.
Pity is the worst. And I can't even explain to you why it's so bad. But, you know, I'd rather people just didn't know than to have them be like, oh, you poor, pathetic victim, right? And anyone who's got disabilities, you want to focus on your abilities, your ableness, right? You want to work, you know, you want to be seen for your strengths, not your weaknesses. And that's true with everyone, but with illness, it's even more true because you become so aware of where your weaknesses are that you can get stuck in a mindset of I'm a victim and I am less than, and who would ever love me, for example, right? Like somehow I'm not a productive citizen, or what am I giving back to the world? And some of my goals in life have been to educate other young people because I didn't have it. I'll go to hospitals and talk to young people who are considering the surgery, because now you have a choice between you can take a biologic, which, you know, they didn't really have those when I was going through it. But if you think about it, okay, let's say I'm on Humira, like there are all these commercials on TV all the time about all these wonderful drugs, but then you look at all the side effects and imagine if I were on Humira right now and there's COVID and these biologics make you immunocompromised. So you're more likely to catch a virus. So in my own case, I'm glad I'm not on that, you know?
So what you're saying is that even when there are good treatments, it's always a weighing of this thing versus that thing. It's never just, here's this, again, you were talking about magic wands, here's this magic wand medicine, and now it's going to be better.
There's no miracle cure. There isn't. There's always going to be a pro and a con. And you have to choose for your own life what you're willing to accept. In my case, I do go into and out of remission. So it's worth it to me to put up with the episodes, knowing that I'll eventually come out of it. And then I'll have maybe a couple of years of just perfect health where I can do an 18-minute plank. The years I, you know, was working with the Olympics. It just, and travel to all these countries that I was told I would never be able to travel to.
So I've seen this. You know, you've welcomed me into your world, and part of that means that you trust me to be present when you wouldn't necessarily trust everybody to be present. So I've actually seen this for myself. But for somebody who's listening, what happens to you when it gets really bad? In your mind, in your body, in your being, what happens?
There's the mental, physical, and psychological aspects. As far as mental goes, my mental acuity just goes out the window. I couldn't write professionally in the midst of a serious illness because I get fevers. Psychologically, you know, you can really get depressed. I mean, just being stuck in one place or sleeping 14 to 16 hour days and not being able to do your hobbies and feeling like you're not living up to whatever your boss or your child or society expects of you, you know? So there's that. And then there's the physical is actually the easiest part to deal with. Believe it or not.
It just feels so, I hate to hurt, right? So that just sounds so counterintuitive to me.
Except that I've gotten so used to it. I know what to expect. Mm-hmm. I know it will pass. I know that rest will help. And I've learned how to, I used to fight against it. I used to be angry about it. I mean, you basically go through, you get triggered every time you get sick, at least for me. And I'm imagining that most people who have visible or invisible disabilities go through the 5 stages of grief pretty much every time.
This would be a great time to talk about the stages of grief.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So you've been talking about depression and you've been talking about sadness. You've been talking about not opening up. It sounds like a lot of what we see people going through right now with this COVID experience.
Yeah, it's interesting to see others go through the stages of grief. I mean, anyone who's had a major life-altering stressor, and that includes death of a friend or family member, loved one, divorce, moving. I mean, all of those bring out the stages of grief. And you don't necessarily follow the stages of grief in order, and you can spend more or less time in each of the stages, but they still happen. Would you like to define?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, there's 5 stages of grief that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross defined, and then somebody working with her has lately added a 6th one. Did you know that?
No, I didn't until now. That's interesting.
So there's denial, anger, bargaining, depression, which to me, depression looks like a lot of different things. I actually want to talk about that.
For sure.
Yeah. And acceptance. Those are the 5 that we all know about. But lately, this man who worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and I don't have his name, he contacted her family and got permission to add a 6th stage of grief, which is meaning making.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. So that is, I completely accept that because that is why I wouldn't change my situation. It's because of the meaning making. It's because of the growth that occurs because of the suffering.
Yeah. Can we start with the beginning, what this looks like for you, these stages for you as somebody living with your...
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in the early days of being ill, it was all denial. And that seems to be what is happening with a lot of of the world with COVID. First, there's the denial, like, this isn't happening. This can't be happening, right? You just can't believe it. You don't know what to make of it. There's no answers. It's just this crazy thing. So nowadays, denial, I don't even go through denial. The second one, anger. I mean, so for example, when I wasn't able to get to my birthday party on time, mm-hmm. I was angry. That makes me angry. I'm like, really? Now, like, I spent all this money and we did all this planning. And so, and imagine a lot of people now that it's been over a month and months in other countries, anger is really prevalent. People are pretty mad. Think about this, like, high school seniors can't finish out their senior year of high school. I mean, granted, not every kid is angry about it, but some are, and rightly so. And people whose lives have completely changed or who've lost their jobs. I mean, that makes you angry. That is a huge part of the stages of grief. And you have an invisible illness. When I'm missing out on something really big, it makes me angry. Yeah, of course it does.
And even little things like things you wanted to do with your kid, that they're not that big of a deal in the scheme of things, but they matter to you because
it's so hard for her. Because here, you know, we had a plan, for example, the other night. We're going to stay in the car so we'd be safe from COVID, right? But we're going to drive and she was going to film in fast motion for one of her TikTok projects. We haven't done it yet, you know? And you can hear in her voice, she's just like, well, you know, my mom is sick. Yeah. Gosh.
Yeah.
I only have so much energy and I only have so much of my life. I don't agree to do things unless I want to anyway. Like, I just don't. So if I agree to something and then I have to cancel, it is not you. It is literally me being sick.
But there seems to be, that's where the bargaining comes in with you, where you're trying desperately. If I do this thing, maybe I can still pull it off. If I do that, because I've seen you do that where you're like, okay, I'm going to try this, this, and this, and cross our fingers and hope that. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, let's look, for example, I mean, you luckily have been so crazy flexible with me, thank God, because last night I put myself to bed at 8 p.m., so that I could get up early and listen to two of the podcasts that needed some work and make some outlines and whatever. And I ended up sleeping for 14 hours. I sleep through things. It's a horrible feeling to wake up and you don't know where you are, what time of the day it is. And then you know your whole day is messed up because, you know, and then I had to push our meeting back. But I wanted to go out. I wanted to be done by May 1st. And
so there's some bargaining there.
Yeah.
And that leads to depression. So I know for me, when I've gotten depressed, like when I gave birth to premature twins, depression didn't look like depression. What depression looked like was asking way too damn many questions. Every time the nurse came into the room, I had 20 questions and I needed them all answered right now. Right. So, or depression can be.
For a lot of people, depression is escapism through drugs, alcohol, running away and abandoning people, you know, that's a really, really common one. I mean, that's why during this whole COVID thing, there's some, all these jokes about like the liquor stores are still open and hey, if each of your hands has a wine glass in it, you can't touch your face. So that's really, really common.
Or over like the people who are like, okay, we're going to get all this stuff done and you do all this stuff so that you don't have to look at the real thing. Like actually getting overactive can be a sign of depression, right?
Right, as long as it's the one thing. Like, in order for me to write my book, I have to first clean the entire house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Avoidance activity. You want to talk about this thing? Okay, just a second, because I have to check my 12 texts or whatever, right? Like, I don't want to be present with it.
Depression can be ignoring your family and looking at your phone. Mm-hmm. And just trying to, because the thing is about depression is whatever anger is pressed down or you just haven't processed it. And so you don't have energy. I mean, that's kind of one of the definitions of depression is you just don't have the energy to do these things that you need. Or usually it's what you think you need to do or you should do. That's a big part of it. Depression causes you to re-examine your life and what are priorities and what aren't. Mm-hmm. Depression in the era of COVID-19, you know, a lot of people get their energy fixes from talking and socializing with other people, and that now is taken away. Depression is also seeing, having to see that your relationship is not what you thought it was. I mean, there's going to be COVID babies and there's going to be COVID divorces. You know it.
I've already seen a few.
Yeah.
I mean, my Facebook feed is so messed up from just the energy of it is so strange right now. And some of it is people saying, yep.
Right. And things that people have taken for granted before, like, oh, let's say getting your hair cut or going for a massage, or a lot of them are first world things. But for some families, it's as bad as, can I put food on the table? Man, if that isn't depression making, I don't know what is. And rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
How do you process it? How do you deal with it? I'm hoping that a lot of people are seeking out therapy. I really do. There's other ways. Some people are able to channel their depression or anger or whatever into art and, you know, writing or painting or creating songs.
How do you do it? How have you done it? The stage that we're coming to here is acceptance. And I see so much acceptance of what your life is now. How do you get to that point?
Oh, brother. So as usual, I'm a difficult patient. I think we talked about my meeting with Maria, didn't we? My first meeting with
Maria? No, we're going to. That's, in fact, in an upcoming episode, we're going to talk about that. But let's just touch on it a little bit now.
Okay, well, so for example, so I'm a big fan of Jungian analysis. There's so many different types of therapy, and it's important for you to find the right one for you. There's cognitive behavioral, there's DBT. For me, Jungian works. There's Gestalt, which I talked about in season 1, because I lose my words When I get very depressed, I lose my words. I just have nothing to say. And so, for example, in Jungian analysis, your analyst would say, all right, then, do you have any images that come to mind? Or look at your dreams, right? And in my case, probably the most recent one that I remember is I said, well, the image that comes to mind is compost, but not compost that's done, but like the beginning of compost where it's like watermelon rinds and there's flies all over it and coffee grounds and it's just a big mess and you can't imagine anything good coming out of it. It just stinks. You know, that's how I felt. And the analyst would say, you know what happens if you just let it sit and make sure it gets a little air, you know, and in which case it would be like get outside once in a while and just get up once in a while. And then eventually it breaks down and there's a, you know, heating up. And that was true. Like I'd be laying there and laying there and laying there for what seemed like weeks, what seemed like months, who knows how long it was. You just kind of lose track of time. And I knew that the heating part was happening when I started noticing things. Like when I get sick, I don't even notice what's going on because my body is so busy fighting off whatever it needs to fight that, you know, when I finally get to the point where I'm like, oh my God, that picture is crooked. I have to fix it. I have to right now, you know, and like those little tiny things. Or the summer that my beloved grandmother died, I found myself on the kitchen floor bleaching out all the grout. And that was incredibly healing for me. By the time I get to the art stage, which is like the compost is almost ready, by the time I'm able to, I still can't talk. I'm still not very verbal, but I can put the feelings and the images into a painting or a collage or whatever. It's a healing. I don't know if this is just Jungian. I think it's not. But one therapist that I know was saying that there's going to be a link between autoimmune diseases and trauma that's eventually found. And trauma can be different things for different people, of course. I mean, there's PTSD from war, there's domestic violence, there's rape. These traumas affect people in different ways. And if they're early enough, if you've had these things happen early enough, there's a broadband circuit that bypasses your frontal lobes and goes right to your reptilian brain.
Because it happened when it was pre-verbal, when you didn't have words for what was happening to you.
Yeah, age 7 is formal thinking. So anything that happens before then, chances are good when you get triggered, you're going to go into your reptilian brain. So for example, with me, things get somatic. Often they go right into my body. They bypass. So I don't even know what it was that made me sick, you know, and by creating this art that really does help manifest it and puts it outside of your body.
And once you do that, you can find meaning.
Yeah. You're at the acceptance level. You're like, okay, this is just something that I'm going to need to deal with. And then once you're out of the trauma that is extreme pain and suffering, you start to see the meaning that the suffering brought. Ironically, I looked up my Scottish side of the family's coat of arms, and the motto for our family is through suffering, virtue grows.
And I mean, like, so we're in, what was the airport? The Hong Kong airport?
It must have been. And we were on our way to Japan.
Mm-hmm. And you were so out of it. I mean, you took a nap on a bench.
Yeah.
And we managed to scrounge up a wheelchair and I have to like push you through passport control with a wheelchair, right? While the other people are rearranging the stuff. And we find you a place to lie down on the floor in the, what was it? The United Lounge?
Yeah. I used some of my perks so that all of us could be in the United Lounge so that I could lay on the floor. And you guys kind of surrounded me so I had some privacy. And I basically just had to sleep. I was like a limp rag doll.
And you had to pull it together. I mean, like you were not okay. And you had to pull it together in time to walk onto that plane or you were going to stay in Hong Kong. And there were student protests. It wasn't a time to be in Hong Kong.
Oh my God, no. And thank God for Teresa, St. Teresa. So one of my best friends happens to have worked for the airlines in the past. And so she spent hours and hours and hours rearranging flights. And she came back and said, listen, you're going to have to put on the acting. Like you're going to do an Academy Award winning because they won't let you on the plane if they think that you're as bad as you actually are. I went and splashed water all over my face. I put on
the full makeup. Yep.
Yep. And I walked over there, which was really hard, but I walked over with a smile on my face and talked to the pilot and the stewardesses and was just like, you know, I've got an autoimmune disease and sometimes I get dehydrated. And so I just think I just got a little dehydrated. And now that I've rested and I was drinking water and I'm perfectly fine, you know, just completely bullshitting my way through. And I could not wait to get into that damn airplane so that I could just lay down and sleep again. Yeah, sleep is my cure.
And then the next morning,
it's a beautiful sunny day in the land of the rising sun. And I had gotten so much good sleep. And I was so grateful because I didn't feel so horrible as I had the day before that I probably appeared perfectly normal again. I wasn't, but I was so much better that, you know, I was just enjoying like, oh, I actually feel like eating, or, you know, I can sit up straight. This is so wonderful. I'm so grateful. Right?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing this because it's the kind of thing that a lot of people don't ever hear. And yet we need to know about this.
Yeah, please. I implore you, don't think of people with illnesses as lesser. Don't focus on the weaknesses. Feel free to engage someone. And I guarantee they will not be upset if you ask questions about their disability or what, you know, what they have and what their life is like and what they have to do to get around those obstacles. Let's focus on strengths. Let's try to include those invisible people into our society.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tales from a Bucket List Champ. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast and share it with friends. New to us this season, our sound editor is the fabulous Kat Schoner. Our story editor and producer is me, Amy Hallberg, and our writer and executive producer is Kiki Kelly. We'll be back next time with Episode 5, Forestina Gump. Until then, what's one item on your bucket list?